This is 89.9 WWNO. Yes, we're headed for another art-filled week. Are you making plans or do you need some ideas? Well, you've come to the right place. If you're in the mood for dance, we've got plenty of offerings. Ballet, dance and theater fusion, and ancient art forms from North India. It's all in the mixed media. Come along as we go inside the arts. Hi, I'm your host, Diane Mack. An African-American dance company that's been changing lives through the power of movement for half a century continues a season of dance for the New Orleans Ballet Association as it presents Dance Theater of Harlem. We caught up with the company's artistic director and former prima ballerina, Virginia Johnson, by phone. Virginia, welcome to Inside the Arts.
Oh, it's wonderful to be able to talk with you.
Dance Theater of Harlem has been breaking boundaries with art for some 50 years now, and your trip to New Orleans is perhaps bittersweet as you are honoring its founder, Arthur Mitchell, who we lost sadly last month. Tell us about this trailblazer and how you are remembering his work.
Arthur Mitchell was such a visionary. He founded Dance Theater of Harlem back in 1969 with his teacher, Carl Shook, with the idea that he wanted to show what was possible in this art form of classical ballet. Back at that time, of course, people thought that ballet was a Western European art form that could only be danced by people with that kind of descent. And Arthur Mitchell himself proved that that was not true, but he really thought that he needed to create opportunity for more people to be able to do that, to travel around the world and show you what would be possible with classical ballet if it was inclusive rather than exclusive.
And this was the first black classical ballet company in the country?
It was not the first black classical company. There had been companies that were founded in the 1950s that did not survive. But they didn't have Arthur Mitchell at their lead. He was a force of nature. He was maniacal about making sure that this company was going to be definitive about creating an opportunity for African Americans and people of other cultures to be part of this art form. He was driven by his vision. He was a taskmaster, but he had a keen eye for what was really behind excellence. I was a member of the company in those early years, and the training that he gave me and the way that he taught me to look at the work that I do and the work that I do in relation to the world outside of the studio is what informs me today.
And how did you come to join the company?
I had studied for my whole life to be a dancer, to be a ballerina, until my school director told me that I wasn't going to be a ballerina because I was black, that I could certainly have a career, but nobody was going to hire me in a ballet company. So I got myself up to New York. I was at New York University as a freshman, and I said, okay, I need to do ballet. And somebody said, Arthur Mitchell's teaching ballet classes up in Harlem on Saturdays. Why don't you just go up there? And that's what I did.
And what a great move that was for you.
Oh, it was magical. It changed my life. And, you know, Diane, the thing that was important to me was I fell in love with ballet, with the art form. But Arthur Mitchell showed me how ballet was important to the modern world, how Dance Theater of Harlem performing the great works of classical ballet, performing contemporary works, was important to making people understand that in this world you have expectations when you look at somebody, but you have to give them a chance to prove themselves. And that's what Dance Theater of Harlem does. It gives people the chance to show that ballet is not something that belongs to one group of people. It belongs to everyone. No, it's very hard, it's very demanding, and you have to do it right. But if you can do that, that can show people that the world is different from what they think.
You have a rich program, new works and classics. How will the evening unfold?
So the program begins with a work that's choreographed by a Harlem native, Darrell Graham Nultry. It's a work that he created for the company in 2017 that celebrates jazz music, and it celebrates Harlem. The work is called Harlem on My Mind, and he has very cleverly looked at the history of jazz music from the 1930s to the 2010s and chosen music that is all jazz but represents different eras. And it's a really powerful, dynamic, fun work that opens the program, Harlem on My Mind. It's got some beautiful solos, it's got some beautiful group works, and it's a very dynamic, athletic kind of work. The program then goes to George Balanchine's False Fantasy, which is a work that is in the neoclassical style. It's light, it's fun, it's very challenging, but it's really a joy. It's one of those sparkling jewels that Balanchine created. That's followed by a work choreographed by Christopher Wheeldon. It is a duet, a dance for two, I don't call it a pas de deux because it's a contemporary work. The music is Dinah Washington singing This Bitter Earth. Max Richter has created an underscore that plays at the same time, so you get a very contemporary, very soulful dance for two people working together, exploring their relationship. Just drop-dead gorgeous. The finale of the work is Dougla, a work that was choreographed by Jeffrey Holder, who was the great Trinidadian choreographer. Dougla is a work that represents a marriage ceremony. In Trinidad, people of African descent and people of East Asian descent were part of the population. And when the two cultures came together in a marriage, their offspring was called Dougla. And so Jeffrey Holder has created this magnificent spectacle of a marriage in which we see the music is to African drums. The movement is a mixture of ballet and African movement, as well as some Hindu dancing movements, some classical Hindu dancing that meld together to be this expression of what it is when you have a dougla in the world. It's a large work. We're augmenting the Dance Theatre of Harlem Touring Company with four young ladies from the New Orleans Ballet Association program. They have learned and worked very hard the choreography of dougla. They're absorbing the style. I'm so pleased to have this opportunity to put them on the stage with us because they've certainly earned it. NOBA has a beautiful program, I'm sure you know, for training young people in the art. And yes, these young ladies have certainly risen to the challenge.
And there's some 25 dancers in this particular performance?
Yes, absolutely.
And your wish for the next 50 years of dance for Dance Theatre of Harlem?
I would like to make sure that we are here and growing and touching more and more young lives and attracting people to this art form that some people think is dead, and show them that it's alive and well and that we need them.
Dance Theatre of Harlem Artistic Director Virginia Johnson, thanks so much.
My pleasure.
The New Orleans Ballet Association presents the return of Dance Theatre of Harlem Saturday, October 20th, 8 p.m. at the Mahalia Jackson Theatre of the Performing Arts. The Radical Buffoons Theater Troupe is back with an original cutting-edge work that differs from their past comedic performances. They are fusing theater and dance in a presentation from the company's lab program called Stories Without Words. Co-director John Green is here with dancer Millie Marie Brown. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Diane.
Hi.
Cutting-edge work for the Radical Buffoons. You've been busy. Bring us up to speed on
your
adventure.
Over the past year, we ended up producing two really large pieces. We did Mr. Burns in the fall, and then this past spring, we did The Dumbwaiter. And when we looked back, we realized, my God, without planning it, we had a season. And so we wanted to take that opportunity and step forward. So rather than just sticking towards, oh, we're going to do a play in the spring and a play in the fall, we created a programmatic structure where we could make different kinds of work under different umbrellas so we could really reach out to the entire community. So we have a main stage track where we're doing big, outsized comedic plays. We started a young audiences track where we're going to do plays for families that still fall within our mission of physical and humorous. And then we have a track we're calling Lab, an opportunity for members of our collective to invest in work that pushes boundaries, that fuses forms, that doesn't just present plays, but actually engages in artistic experiments of the work. And these aren't workshops. These are fully produced experiences, but they're not traditional in the sense that it doesn't start with a script. It starts with a question, a hypothesis, or a need to experiment. So the project Stories Without Words is being directed by myself and Jarell Hamilton, who's a local choreographer and performance maker.
Millie, what attracted you to this project?
Through my experience with Jarell, I've worked with her in the past, and I saw it on Facebook that they were having an audition, and I was like, okay. It was a fusion of dance and theater, both things I'm interested in.
What are you exploring as you fuse the dancers and the actors in this performance?
The place that I see dance the most is usually when a new music video is released. I distinctly remember that moment last spring when Childish Gambino released This Is America. And it was this amazing combination of political expression, dance, cinematic storytelling, and physical performance. But it's so isolated because I'm watching that alone, you know, sitting at home or at a coffee shop on my tiny screen. And then I'll interact with people. Hey, did you see that video? And we'll talk about the video and maybe we'll rewatch it to people. But this experience that people are having of taking in this physical, expressive content is so remarkably lonely, considering that we live in the age of the internet where we're all connected. So Jarell and I were thinking about, how do we take that process of narrative storytelling through physical movement that everyone understands and channel that into a live experience so that people can return to having performance be this shared moment as opposed to this isolated viewing incident. So Stories Without Words is 14 pieces designed to recreate the cinematic experience of watching music videos on the internet, except in a group, in a space, together, joyously and a little wild. We've been calling it an analog dive down a digital rabbit hole. It's falling into the YouTube video pit, but instead of being alone, you'll be in space with a lot of other people, and these pieces will be able to reach across the stage towards you and interact with you.
Tell us a story.
Millie, you want to pick a story that you're in?
I get to be a TV, and it's a party vibe, but I'm a TV. I get to navigate through pathways that are built like Tetris, like the game Tetris, and it's actually called Body Tetris.
Like, you can take that with its fun, funky lights and its kind of weird look, because this is a TV with a body dancing. You can take it at surface level, but as you begin to watch the dance and the movements and some of the dance phrases that Jarell, as the choreographer, put in, you begin to see deeper conversations around the things that we grab onto physically to do in our lives.
You get to create a story for yourself inside of the story that's already being told.
And it's all done without words.
All done without words.
How difficult is it to tell a story without words?
Surprisingly, it's easier for me to communicate without words because dance is, I like to say, it's my first language. The things I can't say, I can communicate through movement. It's a comfortable feeling for me.
There are political pieces addressing what's going on right now. There are clown pieces, pieces that have to do with human relationship, and there are pieces that have to do with how technology severs any kind of contact or relationship with other beings.
And tell me about your venue.
Yeah, the Fortress of Lushington is a really cool black box space right off of Elysian Fields, about halfway down the block on Burgundy Street. The gentleman that owned it, Bunny Lushington, has gotten to know the theater community more and produced more and more shows, and he's slowly converted this space, which he calls an incubator, an arts incubator in the Marigny. He's turned his garage into a fully functioning black box. It's a 50-seat theater with a stage, a full light grid, opportunities for great sound.
How are you hoping audiences will connect with your new theater concept?
Because the concept of a music video is so universally understood, I think that people will inherently understand what they're seeing. What's fun is that because we're in a theater and not restricted by a screen, when those videos start to reach out past that point and start to engulf the space and start to happen around us and start to involve the audience in interesting ways, it's going to be trippy, I think. It's going to be really exciting. The variety of this ride, I think, will keep people on their toes and keep people really engaged and realizing in themselves how much of their expression comes through their body. And I think it also will engage audiences to just remember how much they enjoy sharing the experience of performance with others. And generally, I think everyone's going to come out with really wide eyes and a big smile on their face.
Radical Buffoons co-director John Green and dancer Millie Marie Brown. Thanks.
Thank you, Diane.
Thank you.
Radical Buffoons Lab presents Stories Without Words, with performances running October 18th through November 3rd at the Fortress of Lushington, 2215 Burgundy Street, corner of Elysian Fields. More info at radicalbuffoons.com. You're listening to Inside the Arts on 89.9 WWNO New Orleans Public Radio. I'm Diane Mack. A cultural celebration awaits you uptown as the Indian Arts Circle of New Orleans, in partnership with Loyola's College of Fine Arts, presents The Power of Indian Dance and Music, a classical concert featuring two ancient art forms of North India. Spokeswomen Irmala Kamath and Jayashree Rao are here. Welcome. Thank you, Diane.
Thank you, Diane.
You know, this sounds like an exciting evening. Tell us, which Indian artist are you bringing to town?
Our program has three elements. Kathak, which is an old Indian dance form. The artist is Laboni Mohanta. The sarod is played by Sugata Roy Chowdhury. And the tabla is played by our very own Andrew McLean. There's a lot of call and response as part of the program.
Kind of like call and response in jazz that New Orleanians are familiar with.
Yes. So come out and take a look and see how we present it in this form.
You talked about the sarod. That's a string-like instrument, maybe like a lute?
Yeah, you're right. And a very close relative of sitar, which many more people know about. The difference between sitar and sarod is sarod doesn't have the frets. It's a much more deeper sound that it produces. So the artist can go from one note to the other just sliding, which is very important for creating the sound, the music, and how it affects you. For me, I prefer sarod any day to sitar.
Tell us more about the sarod performer.
Sugata Roy Chowdhury, over the past 17 years, studied under Pandit Santosh Banerjee, who is the main disciple of Ustad Dabir Khan, who is the last descendant of Mia Tansen, who is considered to be the godfather of Indian classical music. And Sugata Roy has been performing for decades, and he has performed all over India and U.S. and other Western audiences.
Tell us more about the experience. Is this going to be spiritual in nature?
Yes, absolutely. You are taken to a different place and time, and also the way the music produces emotions in you. It's not a very typical musical experience. And this time, it's unique even for us because we have never had artists from Kathak tradition and sarod performing together along with the accompaniment, you know, the tabla.
Wow. Now let's talk about the dance.
Kathak is one of the eight classical forms of Indian dance. Katha means story in Hindi. So you will be also watching a story in dance form. And the accompaniments with the tabla, it kind of syncs with the dancer's feet. And the sarod, which is the next accompaniment, gives it an element of depth and structure.
So we're talking about Indian dance accompanied by the sarod and the tabla, which is a drum. We're talking about rhythmic movements here?
Yes.
And who is the dancer?
Laboni Mohanta. She is the disciple of Chitresh Das. He came and performed at Noba a couple of years ago along with a tap dancer.
What types of stories are being portrayed?
Traditionally, it's the stories based on Lord Krishna. It is mostly love stories, I think. I'm not sure what she's going to perform that day. That's the other thing about Indian music and dance. It's based on their mood on that day and the time of day.
In this particular dance form, it's very crucial. The hand gestures and the facial expressions kind of tell you the story, and the rhythmic tapping from the feet along with what's called gungurus. These are little bells. And that is going to keep the rhythm similar to what the tabla will do. And there is going to be a lot of the pirouettes that you see. You know, some of the influences are from Middle Asian dance forms as well as the flamenco that more people are familiar with. So you are going to be seeing a lot of twirling, keeping the beat with the tabla.
And speaking of the tabla, who is the performer?
Tabla is performed by Andrew McLean. He is our native son. Andrew got interested in Indian music and then went west to the Ali Akbar Khan School of Music. Prior to that, he was also influenced by other musicians, and he used to play electric guitar and singing in a progressive rock band.
That's different.
Yes, it is very different. And he used to perform at the old Howling Wolf in Fat City, for those of you who are familiar with that, Muddy Waters and Jimmy's Club. And then he actually studied in UCLA School of Ethnomusicology program. And he then went to do a field study stint in the Ecuadorian Amazon. and he studied the ceremonial healing songs with a Quechua shaman and then brought it back and performed with the notable New Orleans musical shamans, Henry Butler, Michael Ray, Kid Jordan, Tony DeGrady, James Singleton, Steve Mazowski, Mardi Gras Indian Chief Smiley Ricks, and George Porter Jr., and the list goes on and on.
Wow.
I know. He does have a very broad-based musical, you know, background.
Yes, he does. What would you say is the best way to prepare for a concert like this?
It's going to be different because Kathak and Indian classical music, we have never brought them together here. And some of us in the committee have not seen a performance like this. So I myself, I'm going to be attending with an open mind and not have preconceived ideas about what a performance should be, whether or not they'll perform your favorite raga or whether or not the sequence is going to be like what you used to be. Just throw away all preconceived notions to the wind, calm, relax, and enjoy the performance and be prepared to be taken to a different era, a different place in the world, and just enjoy yourself.
Jayashree Rao and Irmala Kenneth with the Indian Arts Circle of New Orleans. Thanks for stopping by.
Thank you, Diane.
The Indian Arts Circle of New Orleans presents The Power of Indian Dance and Music, Friday, October 19th, 7:30 p.m. in Loyola University's Nunnemaker Hall. That's our show for this week. Major support for Inside the Arts comes from the Hellas Foundation. Additional support comes from Christwood Retirement Community, the Contemporary Arts Center, and the New Orleans Opera Association. Our program is a production of WWNO and is archived at WWNO.org. I'll be back with more ideas for your artistic palette on Tuesdays at 1 p.m., Wednesdays at 8:30 p.m., and a shortened edition on Thursday mornings at 8:45 when we'll go Inside the Arts. I'm Diane Mack.